The following presentation is brought to you by The Pride of ODU, the official NIL collective of Old Dominion Athletics. Be a monarchist. Join the Pride.
Monarch Nation, welcome back to In the Lion's Den. We've got Coach Tennant McVeigh back in the house. Tennant, welcome to your show.
Evening, gentlemen. It's great to be here as always. Appreciate you jumping on with me this evening.
All right, let's start with last week. We got a beautiful home opening win against George Washington, 2-0. What do you think were the keys to this game that led to this great victory?
I think it was patience. You know, was the key to it. You know, obviously the first game of the season is always extremely difficult because you're going into that game not knowing a lot about the opposition. You know, we had played George Washington last year. They returned a few guys, but, you know, you don't really get to see them then. The last time we watched them was at the very start of last season. Obviously a lot changes in that time, new recruits, all the stuff that goes with that. And in preseason, the way that it works, you know, a lot of guys will play against friends or people that they make agreements with that they're not going to share game film and things like that, which is, you know, it's difficult then to get your hands on that to sort of see what they're doing this year or they're making any changes. So it's always a little bit anxiety inducing when that first one comes around. And, you know, we started the game off pretty well and we were able to control the game in all aspects. And we created chances, but we just couldn't break them down. The keeper made a great save in the first half and then made another great save in the second half. So I told the boys at halftime, it was like, look, keep doing what you're doing. Yeah, there's nothing more that you need to do on that side, but you can't get frustrated. And in the first half, when things, we hadn't scored and we were the better team, then that frustration, you know, sort of kicks in and then we start to be a little bit too direct or we start making decisions that aren't generally within what we're trying to do. And then you allow a team like George Washington, who they wanted set plays, they wanted to slow the game down, and we gave them a couple of opportunities that way. So it was just really important for us to stay the course, be patient with what we were doing, keep knocking on the door, and ultimately look for that one opportunity that we needed a little bit later than I would have liked. But at the end of the day, you know, with 12, 15 minutes to go, you know, to get that first goal. And then we comfortably kind of got through those last 10 minutes and we were able to get a second while they were chasing, you know, so a good result, a clean sheet, which is extremely important. You know, they had there was a little scare at the end. They had a good opportunity with about 5 seconds to go, but the guys really were patient with it and they got their reward at the end of the game. So really proud of that and glad that that first one is over.
So last time we talked about styles, different styles of play. And watching that game, I could see exactly what you guys are trying to do. You talk about possession, talk about maintaining, but GW seemed like they either wanted to play a different style or you forced them into where they didn't seem to be able to possess the ball very well. It was more just long banging it down the field and trying to hope to get that last guy where he could make one guy miss and just get a shot. Is that intentional or is that the type of ball that they like to play, that style?
I would say, you know, they're probably a little bit, you know, direct in what they do. But I will say this, we got our press right a lot of the time, you know, that made it difficult for them to play or string together a lot of, you know, a lot of passes. So I think there's a little bit of both in that there. You know, I think if their coach is looking back on the game, he's probably looking and saying, you know, maybe we could have sprung a little bit more, a couple more passes to break us down a little bit more to create some more solid opportunities. But I got to say, I think we defended pretty well. We got our lines right. We got pressure on the ball higher up the field. And it forced them into playing in behind us a lot, which can be dangerous. And, you know, college soccer is very different to the soccer that you're going to be watching in the Premier League on a Saturday morning. And the game has evolved a lot over the past 10 to 15 years. So, you know, it's always dangerous when you're playing against a direct team because you have to be really good at what we call the percentages. That means first and second balls, winning the first one and then dropping and anticipating where the second ball so you can establish possession again. And to be honest, there've been a lot of good football teams over the decades who have lived and died by playing the percentages. And it can be an extremely effective way to play if you get it right and you have the right mentality around it. So for us, when we're in those moments and we're defending and we've made teams with our pressure go into longer situations, we have to be really good at making sure we pick those first and second balls up. And I thought we did a good job of that. You know, in these first two games, we've done a very good job of that.
All right, obviously, Jake Lane had a big game coming in off the bench, two goals. Talk to us about this transfer from Bowling Green.
Really exciting. You know, I'm glad the fans got to see him on the field at the weekend or on Thursday. Here's the thing, you know, Jake was fantastic. I've got four wingers right now who all can do different things, and they've all contributed fantastically. Jake came off the bench. He's got quick feet. He's able to go by players. You know, my alumni, my friends that are our alumni group were standing in the corner and were really excited, you know, when he was picking up the ball, and they were encouraging him to be really positive with it. And to be fair, we put him on the left to start. And then as the game developed a little bit, you know, it was hard to take him off the pitch, you know, but we were looking at legs, we were looking at sort of spelling some people, but we just couldn't take him off. And I made the decision then to put him on the right-hand side. And there he was able to cut in on the stronger left foot, you know, and he was dangerous out that side. And to be fair, I tell our forwards all the time, if you get half a yard, test the goalkeeper. You know, and we've got to be a little bit better at doing that and a little bit more clinical at doing that. And Jake took that to heart on Thursday. And the two strikes that he had were fantastic. Didn't give the goalkeeper much of a chance. And that's what you get when you're brave enough to take that responsibility and get something on target. And he did. So I was so happy for him. He'd had a not a rough couple of weeks, but Jake is a really intense guy in that he wants to do really well. We refer to he's like a spaniel. You know, he's out on the field all the time. He trains so hard. He lives and breathes soccer, and he just wants to win, and he just wants to do well. And I'd sort of told him, take a breath. Be patient with yourself. It's going to come. You don't need to put too much stress and anxiety on yourself. And the hug that we had after the game, you know, was really meaningful because I think our conversations in the lead up to the game, you know, had sort of given him that sort of freedom to play like that. And then getting the reward from it was really important for him. But it's a bit of a special moment and really glad that our fans got to see him play because I think he's a really exciting player.
Yeah, that was pretty awesome. All right, now I'm going to be that guy before we move on to Elon. So I was at the game. I had a great time. Matter of fact, it was actually really fun because there are a lot of guys from the school that were out there supporting. Obviously, football has their first game on Saturday at Indiana, but Ricky was out there watching you guys.
Yep.
He's a little incognito. I think he was out there. He really wanted to be a sports guy or a fan and watching the game, but him, Harry Minium, Bruce Stewart, Wood Selig, they're all on the fence watching the game. Eventually, I just had to go over there to see if I could get a scoop from any of those guys. But really enjoyable watching the game. It was great. The weather was awesome. I was disappointed in the turnout, though. There were some people from some of the sports teams that were out there to support you student-wise, and that was awesome, and they were making noise. But coming from my perspective, I was expecting more. I know that you've really been very active in trying to build fan support, build an experience, you know, make it an event. Obviously, I want to be the bad guy here because that's my perception of we need to do better as fans. When fans come out, how does that help the guys? How does that help you guys out?
It's such a game changer. It really is. You know, when you have that home support and that home crowd behind you, cheering you on, it makes a difference. You know, I've been fortunate in my career, not only as a college soccer player, but as a professional playing for my country. When there's 10, 15,000 people there, it's a life-changing experience. What people need to understand is when there's 3,000 people here, it's a life-changing experience for these guys too. You know, I go back to West Virginia last year and, you know, Saturday night, great night for football, a really good game of football. You know, we had such a big crowd, and it spurs the guys on to just go that extra inch. And, you know, I know we had a little bit of the weather leading up to the game last week, you know, was a little bit, you know, questionable. But at the end of the day, I want our community to get behind us. And I know that this is a special group of guys. even getting kids out here, and everyone knows we want kids on the field. We want to get autographs signed. We want to make them feel like they're a part of this too, because we want to be a community club. We want to make sure that the fans feel like we're engaged with them, that we're here to be of service to them as well, and have fun while they're doing it. We know that we're going to create a great environment here on the field, and hopefully the rest of the stuff that goes around that can continue to grow, and we can fill this park out. We've got a great facility. I think we've got one of the best setups, on the East Coast to watch college soccer. So, I want to make sure that the fans know that we're here and that we're here to represent you, and we want you to be a part of this, and we're here for you. I'm hoping Friday night with VCU coming to the town, we can encourage as many people to be here on campus and off campus to come and help these lads out, because we need you and we want you here.
Great product on the field. You can walk around to the other side. There's things you can buy: hamburgers, hot dogs, adult beverages, kids beverages. I mean, our favorite buddy down the street, his beer is not being sold from Afterglow, but all the other stuff you can get.
Mm-hmm.
So I think you can grab one of those, stand right there on the sideline on the far side where all the construction is for baseball. I mean, you're just like 5 feet from the action. Or if you prefer to sit in the stands, you could do that too. There's a little bit of it for everybody.
I think it depends on how much you want to hear me screaming. Stay the other side. You'll get to enjoy the game a little bit.
You
more.
Can hear you on the other side too, Tanner. So it doesn't matter.
All right. I'm hopeful with students being back on campus, classes going on, they'll come out. I know they're usually a bigger part of the crowd, but the general public should just try one game. Just come out for one game. Give them a chance to put on a show for you. All right, but let's move on to last night, Elon. Pretty decent crowd, 900 announced down there in Elon. Obviously, this game ends 0-0, a tie. I want to ask you a question about the box score, because I need to learn more about the box score. Looking at the box score, it shows each team's attacking percentages. It shows Old Dominion looks like it's attacking very well last night. I think it was like 36%. And then it looked like Elon was mostly at midfield for most of the game. Were they trying to play a keep away? The game being on Flow Sports, I didn't get to watch.
Yeah, I will say this. So don't the box scores, it's difficult with soccer when it comes to stats like that, because it's a singular person kind of manning the box up there. The Y Scout, we use analysis tools to sort of look more in depth at those types of things, with the game. So you get a clearer picture, when you have those more in-depth stats. It gives you a general overview of the game. I think last night it was, I know the coaches at Elon very well. And Revo, the head coach there, as soon as the final whistle went, he turned around, came to shake my hand. He was like, "What a great game of college soccer." And what he meant by that was it's two really competitive teams, two very different teams that tested each other at times, that kicked each other at times, that, there was a scuffle in the middle of the game. Yeah, it was just a college soccer game. It was a really good test for us on the road. Elon, a place that's pretty close to me. I worked at Elon for a little while, so going back there, was my first time as a coach, a head coach, taking a team back down there. And I saw a lot of familiar faces. You talked about the crowd. Elon did a great job last night. It was their student athlete welcome back picnic. So all of the student athletes had a tailgate and a picnic before the game. They fed them and then they all came across to the game. And, some of those events, sometimes you don't get, the student athletes might not stick around, but they stuck around last night because the game of football was so good. And I think when you look at the game and going on the road, we had more of the ball. We moved them pretty well at times. I said to the guys at halftime, we just weren't clinical enough in the final third. We didn't create enough high percentage chances in the final third. So at 0-0 at halftime against the team, again, probably a little bit more direct on the night. And I think, again, through our pressure and through some of the things that we did. But big, strong, physical Elon group that, want to play off second balls, want to mix it up with you, play in the right areas of the field. And that can be very, very difficult to play against. Controlling, much of the game, there was a couple of spells, especially in the second half, where they were able then to come into the game a little bit, as we tired. you know, but we defended really well and we stood really firm. And I said to the guys, you know, the way that it's the trajectory of the last few years, if the, that game had been last year, we would have found a way to lose 1-0 because it was tough. It was really hard. And at times you had to really stand up and be tough and throw yourself in front of things. And we did that. So at the end of the game, there's about 2 or 3 minutes left. And I said to the staff, I was like, look, would have loved to win this, but coming on the road, not creating enough quality chances to say, well, you know, we let one slide there. You know, they're going to beat a lot of teams this year. That's a good side, and they'll be really difficult to beat. You know, to go down there and for us to be resilient and tough and stand up. You know, one of the big things last night, there was a bit of a melee in the goal mouth. Jet, our big centre-back, had went up with the goalkeeper, I thought, pretty fairly. They took offence to that. All the kids come together. But to see 10 of your players run in to back up their friend who's lying on the floor, that's what, you know, you're building teams here. And to see that and the passion that they have, you know, and it's the same for them as well. You know, it's great. So I think a really good early season test for us and to come away feeling good about ourselves again was really important. And not a bad result, but we got to turn those into 1-0 wins.
All right. So now come back home. You got VCU. You mentioned that earlier. Let's talk about that game. What should we expect? What does VCU want to do? And why should fans come out?
Friday night, 7 o'clock. I think it's going to be a beautiful weekend for it. Start the weekend off right. Obviously, in soccer, we call this game a derby, which is a rivalry game. You know, we talk about that here. Obviously, VCU's in state and stuff. But the ODU soccer, VCU soccer rivalry has been there for years. This past Saturday night, I was at a ex-VCU soccer player's wedding, you know, and there was a table of VCU alumni and a table of ODU alumni. Not much intermingling, you know, a little bit of, they were all great guys, but, you know, that rivalry is really big in our community. So they're going to be coming down the road. We went up there last year and did not play well. And, you know, it's always been a sort of back and forth. We've won one, they've won one. You know, we owe them a little bit. And to be at home on Friday night, feeling good about ourselves, I think it's going to be a really good game of football. VCU will, they'll be very, they like to play football. They like to possess the ball. They want to move you. They want to be intricate with their passing. So I think we've got to get it right defensively and make sure that we don't allow them to dictate in any way that way, which I think we're very capable of. And then we've got to move the ball. We've got to get at them in transition, and we've got to punish them. You know, I think it'll be an exciting one for our fans, but also for the neutral fan as well. So I think it'll be a great exhibition of the game on Friday, and you'll really enjoy the two styles as they sort of contradict each other.
All right, I'm glad you brought up the rivalry because it's kind of waning in other sports like football.
Yep.
And obviously they don't have football. Basketball, and they don't have football. But for my generation of students, all the people I went to school with, we hated VCU and everything. So it's good to see it still has that lasting impact in other sports. But I wonder, is it hard to, with the transfer portal, those new players that don't know you that well, is it hard to relay the importance of a game like this to the for the fan base? To those players?
I think with the way that we have started to build and mold this program, you look at the amount of Virginia kids that we have on the team, and then the amount of kids that we've actually been able to retain over the past couple of years, you know, that have Virginia roots. It's not as hard as you might think. And, you know, it's something that I do talk about. I think football is a sport that has created rivalries, has sustained rivalries across the world. And the passion that brings is something that is really intricately meshed into our sport. So I think the way that we as coaches approach it and the way that our Virginia kids and our older, more experienced players and the way that they've seen us before those games and the extra little bit of, you know, needle that you would have going into it, you know, they know that and they can then relay that to the new players. Of course, it's a challenge every year to make sure that everyone understands what it is. But if you take the European kids, and the minute that we say it's a derby game, they go, oh, okay, so It's Rangers Celtic, it's Liverpool Man United, it's Ajax Feyenoord. You know, wherever you're from in the world, if you play soccer, your town has that rivalry. Even if it's lower league, like that rivalry is just instilled in us. So they know exactly what we're talking about. I would say the American youngsters that have grown up and don't really see that, they get it too because they watch the Premier League. But there's maybe a little bit more work to do there in sort of making them understand why it's important. And, you know, the Virginia boys really buy into it because at the end of the day, they grew up with these kids. They played on the same club teams. They maybe see them at Thanksgiving. They maybe play in the summer league, you know, against each other. And to have that kind of, we got you last year, you know, that type of, it's always a nice feeling.
Maybe even at a wedding.
Yeah, 110%, 110%. So, yeah, it's not as hard as you might think, but it's something that we're very aware of. And if we can continue to build our culture, you know, based off the importance of those things and continue to bring young Virginia players and kids that are passionate about those types of rivalries, I think we'll be okay.
All right. Now, here continues the education of Aaron as a soccer player. I have two questions, Tennant. Both of these came up for the last home game and then me just watching the women's game the other day. The first one came up from your game. I was thinking about substitutions. Teach me about substitutions. Is there a limit on quantity? Is there re-entry of players like college soccer? Is it the same as professional? When someone comes out to the game and they see someone come on the pitch or come off the pitch, like what should we know?
The history of substitutions. When football, soccer was first invented or when they first started playing it, you maybe only had one sub back way back in the start. And when I started playing the game at a high level, in the Irish league that I played in, it was still a league that you were only allowed to have three subs on the bench. And that was the maximum that you could use. In the Premier League, then they had went to like, you could have 10 on the bench, but you could only use three. And that was the way that football was played for decades and decades and decades. What happened then, and college soccer was different. Because college soccer used to have rules where you could have an unlimited amount of subs up to your roster limit of 24, but in the second half of the game, you could take out a player, say one of your strikers could come out, have a rest, and then you could put him back in. And we called that re-entry. You couldn't do that in the first half, but you could do that in the second half. Now, that shaped and made college soccer different to normal soccer, because if someone's getting a rest for 10 minutes in the middle of the half, then they can come back on, and it just makes the game a lot more frantic and the pace is played a lot higher. So I think there's been a push, especially on the men's side, and it is the men's side, we need to get as close to FIFA rules as we can, because that's the true sport. That's what we are playing. So we had petitioned the NCAA. You know, obviously there's a lot goes into that. So now the rule in college soccer is that you can sub in 6 moments of the game. You can still use as many players as you want up to your 24 in your roster or that are rostered for the game, but you can only use 6 moments in the game. So in the first half, if I bring on 2 players and then 5 minutes later, I bring on another 2 players, that's 2 moments. Now at halftime, if I make changes, that doesn't count. But in the second half, then I only have 4 more moments to make changes. So I could do a group of 3. I could do 1. I could do, and to be fair, I think because of my cultural upbringing in the game, we're not a team that substitutes a lot. In different positions, we'll get substituted. When I was growing up, defenders never came off the field. Now in the modern game, you might see the fullbacks, the right back and the left back coming off, because the amount of ground that they cover, a modern day fullback will cover between 9 and 12 kilometers a game. So they might run out of steam. Forwards, midfielders who are covering a lot of ground, those are the positions that you maybe see a few more changes in. But if you're bringing a center back out of the game, someone's probably hurt. That's, you know, those are some of the general things to look for. So a little bit different to the Premier League. The Premier League now, I think, is up to 7 subs. And I think COVID had a lot to do with that. You know, I don't think that it's good for the game. I just don't. But, you know, the Premier League guys are playing 50, 60 games a year. They're trying to limit injuries. So there's a bit of understanding there. But, yeah, you know, so when you see changes for us, we're trying to keep people fresh. we're looking at areas on the field where guys are getting a lot of, you know, legs. What's their load going to be? How can we manage them? And then it comes into a little bit of a game of when you're looking at it, are there good matchups on the field? If I'm bringing a winger on, do I see a weakness in someone's fullback? Do I feel like one of our players maybe has attributes that could punish one of their players? So there's a lot more goes into it just in making changes. You know, I think that one with Jake the other night, making the decision not to bring him off and switch him to the other side and making a change on the other side, you know, those are kind of the intricate decisions that we have to make as coaches. And to be honest, guys, sometimes it works perfectly and sometimes it doesn't. But, you know, I think good coaches make good decisions at the right time. So it's a little bit more intricate than just making those changes. But it's definitely something that I, as the head coach, have to be very conscious of.
And when someone comes off, are they done or can they re-enter at some point in the game?
So if someone comes off in the first half, I can put them back in at halftime. But once they come off in the second half, they cannot re-enter. So the re-entry is now completely done. Now, if someone gets a head injury and has to come up, you can do like a quick head injury sub for that, but that is the only deviance from the rule.
And Mike, I have one other quick one, unless you've got a rules question too.
I have a coaching question.
Okay, you go.
Missed goals obviously are deflating for fans, but the one other play in games that is deflating to me as a fan is an offside call on the marks. Yeah. I wonder, obviously, it's a part of attacking. It's going to happen. But I wonder how you react during those moments.
So I think your mindset towards offside is like a football offside where someone has probably made a mistake and went into an area that they shouldn't be in. It's a mistake. For us with soccer, being offside, it's such a fine line of being offside and not offside. That's why they brought in VAR at the highest level, because it's millimeters, you know, of a decision to run a line or to make a movement. I consistently tell our players, all right, and this is every forward, I'm just going to use round numbers. In order to get one opportunity to score a goal, you have to make upwards of 20 to 30 runs before you get one opportunity. So these guys are constantly looking for opportunities to run behind and to get the other side of the defender. And then we have to get the ball into that space that we're trying to penetrate into. So if defenders get it right, yeah, and for me as a defender, one of the things that I used to do all the time, I'm looking across my line, I'm looking at the forward, I'm looking at the space behind me, and I'm trying to catch him go so that I can step and play him offside. So it's not just the player's decision. Sometimes you're playing against a defender that is reading what you're doing and is stepping into an area so that he does play offside. So there's a lot more that goes into that, and there are lazy offsides. There are plenty of lazy, you know, times where guys don't get back across the line. And those are the ones that you should be frustrated at, because that's just a work ethic thing. But if we're in possession of the ball and we've moved it a few times and we're looking for that penetrating pass and the player has maybe went a second or two early, it could be good defending. You know, it might be just a little bit of misjudgment of time, but you're going to see that a lot more often in soccer. And if a forward isn't offside at any point in the game, he's probably not very good at what he does. But that's that a great question. So a really good question.
I want to clarify. I do want to clarify for me being deflated. I'm not mad at the player. I'm more of like, we had an opportunity there. I'm thinking of that like great pass where they are clearly going to have a great opportunity on goal and the offside flag goes up. That's the moment I'm thinking of when I think of offsides. But yeah, it's good to hear that insight from you.
Yeah. Great question.
All right. My last rules question for tonight, Tennant, is, and this was a discussion on the sideline with some folks. Lots of sports are different with regards to plays being out of bounds. All right. So two questions. One is shot on goal. In order for a goal to actually be a goal, does it have to completely be over the line? Can it touch the line? What's it got to do? And then the second one is just like running down the field with the ball. What's actually out? Because like in football, the guy touches on the line, he's out. Or basketball, if the ball just touches. Explain those two things.
Ball has to be, there has to be air between the line and the ball. So it can't just touch the white line. The white line is the boundary. So as soon as it crosses the back of the white line, either for a goal or for a throw in or a goal kick, then, you know, it has to completely cross the line. Again, now these days, the goal line technology. So when you're watching soccer at the highest level, they have cameras all in the goal. They've got like, it shoots it straight down. Because sometimes it'll hit off a post, it'll ricochet. A player will get there and clear it. And there could be millimeters, you know, it's really tiny, but they have all of this computer programs and things that actually can show you now, is the ball out? It's not, it's like in tennis, they have the one that they use to make sure that the line judges aren't used anymore. But for the goal line technology, that's a big thing. It's not so much for out of bounds on the end lines and stuff. That's the linesman's basically discretion. And it's a little bit easier to get right. But for some of those big calls with goals, they will have the technology. We actually have, through Speedio installed here, two cameras that can look along the line to see if the ball has crossed it. Not that we've had to use that. It'll come around sooner or later. You know, there have been instances in my career where you think the ball's crossed the line, the referee maybe doesn't give it, or it hasn't crossed the line and the referee has given it. Yeah, there has to be air. You have to be able to differentiate it has fully crossed the line for it to be out or to count as a goal.
That actually happened in the women's game the other night. It hit the top of the crossbar, came straight down. There's maybe a half inch between the ball and the line and got cleared. And they, I don't know if they used that or if they just looked at the video. You could see it on the video. One of the things that was really being talked about a lot is, so the ball can be all over the line. It just is like going down the sideline. But a player can actually be out of bounds, running out of bounds and playing a ball that's on the line and it's still good.
Yes. So if you, it's not like, I think in basketball, if you step out of the bounds. So in soccer, if you come off the field, you know, and your foot's off the field to keep the ball in, that is absolutely fine. As long as the ball does not cross the line, you can come off the pitch. Doesn't happen a lot, but you could be.
Marty Smarter.
Thank you for educating us as always. All right. This Friday, big home match against, you said a derby, right? Derby, not derby?
Derby. Yeah. Derby. Derby. Whatever way you want to say it.
Derby.
We call it where I'm from, we're
learning.
Derby.
We are learning. There is a derby on campus Friday night against VCU, 7 o'clock in the Lions Den. And these next couple of weeks, the team will be on the road. They will be on ESPN Plus. So if you're out of town, you want to check this team out, or if you're in Norfolk, you want to check this team out before they come back to play Georgia Southern, give them a watch. It's a fun team to watch. It's a fun game to watch. Just try it out.
Make sure you got to be in. The stadium though Friday because it's not on Plus. That game's not on Plus.
It's not on Plus on Friday. That's another really good one.
Got to be in the stadium.
Women's volleyball have a game, so we're not on ESPN Plus. So you got to get out here on Friday night. Check this out. I think it'll be a really good game. A really good exhibition of the game for us.
I know Mike was trying to close it out there, and I apologize for talking over you. I just wanted to make sure that folks didn't get
lazy. Don't get lazy.
Okay, you said it, not me. It's like, don't get caught up at work.
Yeah.
You know, you got plenty of time to get out there.
To be fair, Aaron, I did lead in with get out to the Lions Den on Friday.
You absolutely did.
That is our message for today.
It is youth night.
So bring the kids out.
Yeah. We'll have autographs. Yeah, we'll have autographs after the game for everybody. Kids can come onto the game and are onto the field after the game to be around the players and stuff like that. We'll have a little kick around at halftime. So bring the kids out. It'll be a fantastic time.
So as always, Tennant, we appreciate you coming on. What's your message to Monarch Nation? Close us out. Take us home.
Again, come support these boys. You know, this community is important to us. We love seeing you guys in the stands. I'm really excited for the season that this team has ahead of them.
You heard the man. We'll see you guys Friday night. VCU, go Monarchs.
Go Monarchs.
Go Monarchs.